Welcome back to Coast. This is the hour. We'll take your phone calls as we talk about ETs and giants out there in those areas of indigenous people with Dr. Artie Six Killer Clark. And welcome back to Coast. We've got Artie Six Killer Clark with us, and we'll take your phone calls as well. Artie, of all the things that you researched, was there a fascinating area for you?
Well, you know, I'm just interested in the in the encounters that people have and the experiences they have. You know, that's been when I started recording stories, you know, more than 30 years ago when I first came to Montana, and I was working with 26 Native American tribal group.
26? Wow.
I was the director of the Center for Bilingual Multicultural Education, and we served 26 tribal groups. And what we did was we recruited people who wanted to study teaching and administration, school administration, so that we could get Native people in reservation schools, because when I came here, there were hardly any Native American teachers or principals and superintendents. And so I would go out and I would interview students and offer them scholarships to come to Montana State, and then I would help guide their programs and served on committees for master's and doctoral students. And when first trip I made to a reservation here in Montana, the person who organized the meeting for me on his reservation, after the meeting was over, he suggested that we go to dinner. And when we finished dinner and we were coming back through his reservation, he said, if you have a few minutes, I'd like to show you something. And he took me up in the mountains above his village, and he said, he parked the car, and he said, he got a pair of binoculars, and he said, if we're lucky, they'll come. And I said, well, who will come? And he said, well, the Star people, the ancestors. And as we sat there and watched the night sky, he told me stories about the legends of his people and how he often came to this site and watched the skies for the UFOs that would come. And on my way back home, I'm thinking, you know, I grew up hearing these stories. Here is someone else from another tribe saying very similar things. And so I just was so curious, and I just made it my mission wherever I traveled and when I was in a casual situation to ask people about their star stories. And that evolved into collecting stories about encounters with star people. And along the way, I heard the stories of giants, and I didn't hear any Bigfoot stories, but so many of those are up in the Northwest, and our region didn't extend up there. Although I do understand that there are some in Montana, up in the northern regions of Montana. You know, I of course heard stories of little people here in Montana and in South Dakota, and you know, I grew up with stories of little people, so. You know, that was, so I just started collecting them and recording them, and I had no intention. I didn't set out to write a book, and I was basically challenged by a lady on one of the reservations who told me that I had a responsibility to write these stories, because if I passed, you know, she asked me, well, what's going to happen to them when you pass? And I said, well, they'll just probably be destroyed because nobody else is interested. And she said, oh, I think a lot of people will be interested. And she said, not only that, she said, you have, this is our oral history, and you have a responsibility to tell it. And so I did. I said, I wrote my first book, was published in 2012, Encounters with Star People. And then this second book, as I say, it was just a, you know, wherever I traveled around the world, you know, I did a lot of speaking at the international and national conferences during my career, and met people from all over the world. And I would always ask them, and of course my specialty was indigenous education, so I was always with people from, wherever I traveled, I was with Native American or indigenous people from other parts of the world. So I collected well over 1,000 stories now.
Good for you. Let's take some calls here for you. We'll go to Anthony, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hello, Anthony. You're up with us.
Now, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Artie, let me share a story I had with one time. In my sleep, I had these dark beings come into my room, and I was lifted off my bed, and they were like blowing steam in my face to where it would paralyze me.
Yes.
I could actually see my room, like nothing was moving. I'm going, this is happening right now. And they were probing me on my right and left thigh. And as the morning went by, I was just like, what just happened to me? When I looked down on my legs, I have identical marks on my inner thigh. They're not like your mole. They're brown in color. But I could feel the penetration in my thighs. Like they came to me, and after that, I felt completely different about everything. Like they took a sample off me or something.
Well, you know, Anthony, I talked to a retired military officer a couple of years ago who told me that they have this mist that he said when they take you on board the spacecraft, this mist is in the air, and it's a totally different environment than what you have on Earth, because they've incorporated in this mist a kind of a chemical that makes you paralyzed, as well as, he said, you're almost like a zombie. And he said and incorporated in that, they told him that it makes people forget so that they don't remember their encounters. But he said that they told him 1% of 20,000 people remember. But they said, we don't worry about those who do remember, because nobody, if they take the chance with their careers to reveal it, nobody's going to believe them anyway. And so we don't worry about the 1%. But if 20,000 people came forth and said, I was abducted, that would be something different. Somebody might believe them. But when only 1% of the 20,000 come forth, so I believe that that did happen to you, because, he said, they told him this is what they do. This is how they make people forget what happened to them.
Is that these encounters, these UFO encounters, do they differ from what people who aren't indigenous say?
I don't think so. I think that one woman told me, and this is really interesting, her story will be in my third book, but she told me that she was abducted. She had been abducted all of her life from the age of 6. And she said that when she had children, then they were abducted at the age of 6. And she said she had 3 girls, and they never came until they were 6 years old. And she demanded to know why they were doing to her what they were doing. And they said that your molecules are like ours. And she didn't understand what molecules were. And they said, well, in the future, it will be called DNA. Then maybe you'll know. And she said, I didn't know what molecules were, and I didn't know what DNA was. And she walked over to a drawer, and she pulled open this drawer, and she handed me a notebook. And she had numbered 1974. She turned to 1974, and she said, now look at this. I wrote those words down, molecules and DNA. And she said, now I hear DNA. She was talking about CSI and the Maury show. I hear them use that word all the time, and I was trying to explain to her what DNA was. And she said, well, they said they abduct people whose DNA is closest to theirs.
Culver City we go now. Jeff's turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Yeah, hi, George and Ms. Artie Clark.
Hi.
Yeah, the story of the little people called the Alush is a curious one, and their ability to transform themselves into plants remind me of a dream that I had in the early 1990s about this beautiful Brazilian woman I seen walking along a lake. I hear this voice explain to me that the woman was made from the plants of Brazil. My question is this, Ms. Clark. If the Alush people were transformed or made from plants, wouldn't this contradict the biblical explanation of how man was made and how woman was made from the rib of man? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Well, I'm not so sure that it would, because, you know, in the spiritual realm of many indigenous people, although they believe in God and a creator, they also believe in the ability of the mind to help them transform into other shapes when it's necessary. And it may be necessary to do that simply to hide your true appearance. It might be necessary to do that to carry out a mission or to protect yourself. So, you know, I don't see that as contrary to religious beliefs.
Okay, first-time caller Rick, truck driving now in Indiana. Hello, Rick. Good morning to you.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, Rick.
I just want to get your opinion on something.
Okay.
If the ancient aliens or sky people actually came to either create our civilization or assist our civilization, why do you think that they left us so primitive? Why wouldn't they give us, like, instructions on how to build crafts that, like, help them travel to this planet or form communication, electricity, just things like that? I'll take the answer off there. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Well, I think what happened, as in the case of the Maya, you know, a great catastrophe had to happen to the Maya civilization. Because at the time that the Spaniards came to Mexico, for example, there were only one or two Maya cities that were even occupied. All the rest of them had been abandoned, and something caused that to happen. And I talked to a number of scholars about it, and I just recently read an article where a scientist just came out two or three weeks ago and said they are totally convinced that what happened to the Maya was a 100-year drought that forced them to abandon their cities. Their cities were you know, anywhere from 50 to 100,000 people, and they just couldn't support that population. So what they did is they moved from their cities. And he explained to me. He said, you know, just think about this: if something happened to the United States and all that you were familiar with was destroyed, and 3,000 years from now, you know, an archaeologist might come to New York City and dig up the Statue of Liberty and call her the Goddess of Flame. He said that's what happened to the Maya. We had the technology, we had the knowledge, but it was lost in our need to survive. He said, we had to feed our families. And if you have to feed your family, if a catastrophe would happen to the world today, you're going to be in the mode of survival. You're not going to be thinking about what was written. And, you know, the other thing, too, the Maya did record in books their history, their astronomy, their knowledge about... they were more astronomers than they were and builders, but all of that was burned by the Catholic Bishop Landa. Only three of those books escaped, because they did write books and had all their knowledge contained in all these books. And when Bishop Landa came to the Yucatan, he considered the Maya, everything about the Maya was anti-religion, and so he destroyed it all. He burned it all, and he killed off their spiritual leaders. So if you have no guidance, people just pick up parts, pieces of this and that, and try to maintain what they remember. But if you have a catastrophe of a 100-year drought fall upon a country, you know, you can imagine what would happen to the people. I mean, look at California today. They've gone through a 5 or 10 year drought, and already there's concern that some of the cities aren't even going to survive because they're running out of water. And certainly it's impacting a lot of things, their ability to grow crops. And so if that's what happened to that part of the world, we can understand
sure.
why.
Sure, and they think that's what happened.
Yeah.
What do you think the Mayan calendar date of December 21st, 2012 was all about?
Well, I think that, you know, what people forget, George, is that the indigenous worldview, and that includes Native Americans, the indigenous worldview is different than the Western worldview. You know, the Western thought is linear, and so you have we are always moving forward. There is that progress and always achievement and moving on and on and on. And if we don't come up with a better iPad next year than we had this year, then we haven't moved along that line. If we haven't come up with a better smartphone or a better television set or whatever, where with indigenous people, it goes in a circle. Life goes in a circle. So that there isn't that demand and that rush toward anything, because life begins and it ends when you cross that circle, when you pass that circle. And that's the same thing with an age. Like when I die, someone else will be born and life will continue. It's the same thing with age. One age begins and then it ends and another begins. So even the Maya, they took advantage of the idea that December 21st, 2012 was going to be the end of the world, because there are several entrepreneurs down there that took advantage of tours and holding spiritual gatherings and doing all sorts of things. But they knew the world wasn't going to end, and in fact found it quite humorous that people thought it was.
Let's go to Sean in Redding, California, West. Hey, Sean, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi there.
You guys are talking about the beings down in Guatemala. How there's you know, Bigfoot, giant blue people. We have all these same stories up in Mount Shasta. Have you ever heard anything about that?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your last sentence.
In Mount Shasta.
So this, oh yes.
A lot of people say that. You know, they've contacted beings there that, beings that can materialize and whatnot. Also, that there's a massive palace, you know, that you can see from the highway that is...
I don't know about the palace, but that area is truly supernatural.
Well, and the indigenous people of that region, don't they say that that's the Mount Shasta is the place where the star people come?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm sure that there's a lot of that kind of activity in that area.
Well, let me tell you something, Artie. Where do people get your book, Sky People?
Well, at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I think Barnes & Noble's even carrying it in bookstores. So it's readily available.
All right, stick with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls on Coast to Coast as we talk with Dr. Artie Sixkiller Clark about some untold stories of alien encounters. Well, tomorrow on Coast to Coast, Richard Shaw will reveal the Torah code and what it means with my name in it. I have no idea what it is. He has 9 separate entries now, deciphered by rabbis and professors, and they say it's absolutely riveting. So we're going to listen to it with him for the first time tomorrow, followed by our show on vaccinations on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Dr. Artie Sixkiller with us, Sixkiller Clark. Artie, how long ago were these visitations?
You mean the ones I have in the book?
Yeah.
They were quite recent.
Okay.
Some of them, at least some of them were. Some of them may have been, the elder I spoke to who was 99 years old, his had occurred when he was 10 years old, where he had found the skeleton of the little man dressed in his silver suit. But the majority of them, I believe, were quite recent.
But how far back did it go?
Well, the ancient stories go back, you know, centuries. You know, the stories of the men coming on the beams of light and things of that nature. The ancient stories, the stories of the giants of the blue kind that lived in the caves before the Maya. You know, those are ancient stories, but the contemporary stories, you know, are not that old.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Wildwood, New Jersey. It's Tony's turn on Coast to Coast. Tony, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, good.
Tony.
Great program tonight. I just wanted to ask if you think that the visitations, you think any of this could be linked to the people that live in the hollow earth, because it's said that there's giants that exist out inside the earth that have all types of technology. And then we've had all types of proof that keeps coming out all the time. They talk about a huge ocean in the center of the earth and things like of that nature.
Well, you know, I really don't know very much about, you know, the hollow earth people. I do know that I have been told by several people I've interviewed that they believe that there is an alien base under the ocean, that they have seen spacecraft come out of the ocean and return to the ocean. So, you know, I'm not sure if those would be the same people or not, but certainly there is indications that something is going on in the oceans.
Yeah, I understand why we keep all this stuff a secret, because, you know, it probably would destroy religion if you realize that, you know, most of our religions are based on people that came down with technology and spacecrafts, and they were just normal people that they were just lucky enough that they were born at a time that they have technology.
Right.
That would probably shatter religions, Artie, wouldn't it?
Well, and that's the reason why originally I think our government kept all of this a secret and lied to us, because, you know, when you think that, you know, it wasn't so long ago that John F. Kennedy was, you know, people argued about him being president because he was Catholic. They didn't want him in the White House. You know, religion played a much more important role perhaps than it does today, and ministers had a lot of influence. And when you think that the Bible says that man was made in God's image, well, you know, that's to think that an alien race that didn't look like us was made by God would just destroy, you know, what we had been taught in Sunday school.
So with all that has happened since the beginning of time, David Jacobs, who's an investigator, believes that this isn't good, that there are some evil entities out there.
Oh, I agree.
You do?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I've been told by more than one person that I was told by a friend recently. I went to college with him, and he worked at NASA during the moon exploration period, and he told me that there's no question that life exists out there, and he said the thing that concerns him is that those beings aren't necessarily, that human beings aren't their priority. Their priority is the earth. He said this earth is a gem in the universe, and they don't want us destroying it. They would like to have it. And he said, so they don't care what happens to the human beings. He said, we're a primitive species. When you consider their technology. And, you know, and he said, you know, I was thinking about what Stephen Hawking said, where we shouldn't be sending out all these probes announcing where we are in this universe, because somebody may come that isn't as friendly, that isn't interested in us and may treat us just like the white man treated the Indian when he came to. And that's exactly what Hawking said.
Does any of this scare you, Artie?
Well, you know, I kind of believe that it's all out there. And
oh, yeah.
If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I certainly have experienced, have had my own experiences, and I believe that they exist.
Okay, let's go to Sergeant Smith, first-time caller, truck driving in West Virginia. Sergeant, good morning.
Good morning, George. Artie, how are you doing this morning?
Good, sir.
Hey.
Hi. I'm a little nervous. Forgive me. I never called a radio show before. I was at Fort Bliss, Texas in June of 1989, and I was doing some training in the desert, and we had these old 113 personnel carriers. And at the end of our training, they said, we're going to take these 2 days north, and we're going to drop them off with some security forces. We're not going to use them anymore. And I'm like, and I volunteered to be one of the drivers. So we drove north for 2 days, and we encountered four different layers of fencing that said the restricted government reservation. Now, when we got there at night, I noticed that there was a lot of aircraft flying around, but the weirdest thing about it was they were doing pinwheels and cartwheels, and they were streaking across the sky, red and yellow. And it kind of reminded me about the children's toy, the sea monkeys, how they would spin around in the water.
Sure.
Now, yeah. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Yeah, and we came into the valley, and in 1989, it was still the height of the Cold War, there was Russian equipment in all these motor pools, black and white camo, desert camo. And the strikingest thing about the area I can remember is there was two runways and these big hangars and all the towers, everything was in red. One of the aircraft came into land at the runway. It streaked across the sky like a red flame, and it came down, and when it landed, the hangar opened and it went into the hangar, and it looked just like a B-2 bomber. But the physics of it, it couldn't be how it streaked from one end of the sky to the other in 1989. And then after we parked the vehicles, they put us on a bus with blacked out windows, and they said, don't put the windows down. And it's just, I've never shared that story with anyone, and it's just kept it close to my breast. And
That's an amazing story.
I just had to share my story.
Thank you.
Absolutely, thank you. That's a really interesting story. I'm glad you shared that, and I'd love to hear more details.
Your next book, Artie, could be all these stories that come in.
No, you know, people do write to me, and I try to answer every single email. I don't have a staff, but I read every email, and I answer every email. So if the sergeant is out there and he would like to be in touch with me, you can write me at Artie, A-R-D-Y, at sixkiller.com.
All right, let's take some more calls here while we have time. Chris in Van Buren, Arkansas. Christopher, go ahead.
Hey, George, it's a pleasure to talk with you again. And hello, Artie.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Hey, I have a question for you. It seems like these extraterrestrial beings seem to have some sort of a deeply vested scientific curiosity in us. And I had kind of a two-part question. One, do you believe that they do bioengineering and DNA testing on us where they make hybrid people alien types? And two, if they do, if you believe they do, do you think that this has anything to do with the phenomenon that seems multicultural, that happens to everybody, it seems like, the stories of the black-eyed children and the Nephilim?
Well, I do believe that they are using our DNA. I think that they're doing two things. I think they're cloning people. I've been told by people I've interviewed that they have been told that they have been cloning people for quite some time and using them to populate other planets. I have also been told that they do indeed make hybrid children, but one of the biggest interests that they have in our DNA is that because they have come from societies where they have gone beyond the point of where they are no longer biological, 100% biological, that they have actually become so mechanical that they've expanded their lifespan almost indefinitely, but they also have lost all the characteristics of their biological entity. And so they're hoping that by farming the DNA of humans and they can somehow regain some of that original, I guess for a better word, it would be humanity. And I think that's a very interesting take, and I've been told that by more than one person.
All right, Aaron, you're in Riverside, California, and you're on the air with us.
Yeah, how's it going? Nice to meet you guys.
Good, Aaron.
Artie.
Aaron is with Artie.
Great. My question was, Artie, I've been having a sleep paralysis probably for about, I want to say, a good 10 years here and there. And I want to know if you think this might be maybe extraterrestrial cause or paranormal. Usually it kind of, when I'm having it, I'm completely paralyzed. I can't move.
Or medical. Or medical. That's always got to be checked too, Artie, doesn't it?
Right, right. Have you checked the medical aspect of it?
I have not. But it's really realistic where I feel like, you know, they're coming in the room and I can't really see straight at it, but more peripheral. And I just kind of like, it just takes over and I just wake up the next morning. Really creepy. Just wanted to know, see what kind of opinion do you have on that?
Well, I really don't. I think the first place for you to start would be to perhaps see a doctor.
It's a medical, but you got to rule things out, Artie.
Right. That's exactly right. You've got to first do your own investigation and then, you know, go from there. Because I really, you know, I haven't talked to anyone who has been paralyzed waking from sleep. People that I talk to find paralysis when they encounter a UFO or they're on board a UFO, but not in their own bedroom.
Why the indigenous people? Why were they visited?
You know, I think because indigenous people are probably more open. You know, we have, so many of us have stories.
Maybe more innocent?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's the fact that so many of us have those stories in our tradition about the star people. And I think all people had that at one time. But you know, when science took over, when the Enlightenment period happened in history, all the ancient oral stories and the history is all thrown out in for progress. And so all of a sudden, all the oral stories became legends and fantasy. And so I think that the native people, the indigenous people, have maintained those stories, where you don't find a lot of those old stories that were maintained in the Western world. They just threw them aside for science. And so I think that's the reason why indigenous people are more open. And then, as one person said to me, you know, if they put away their cell phones and their TV sets and their Game Boys and watch the skies, they might see something too.
Judith in Santa Rosa, California.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, I want to tell you, I know that the little people are real and they're with us today.
How do you know this, Judith?
All around us. I know it because my car broke down one winter's day as I was passing Mount Shasta. I ended up staying there for 9 months and got a job with Tri-County Indian Council. While I'm sitting at my desk, I get a call from Thomas Banyakya, the Hopi spokesman who I had not seen since the 60s when I went there and lived with them and learned from them. Well, Thomas Banyakya says to me, The elders are wanting to speak to the people. We want you to arrange a gathering. And I found out he wanted it for 4 days, and I asked him how many, and he said about 500. And I wound up going to the people. I was living in Mount Chest at the time, and I got help from the Indian people in Redding, and they found a place for us to gather at the southeast base of Mount Shasta. And on the fourth day, the Wintoon medicine woman, traditional medicine woman, Florence Jones, had us build a huge bonfire and then set in concentric circles these log ends. And the inner circle was elders and leaders of the tribe. And then there was a little more outer circle where other Indians, myself and I'm Chumash Indian from the islands off of Santa Barbara. And one of the leaders of my tribe, Kotlota, was standing to my left. And it's nighttime, and Florence Jones in sweats and tennis shoes is calling out as loud as she can in her language, and sometimes saying, "Oh Jesus, oh Jesus," and walking into the fire in each of the four directions, dancing, and the flames are coming up to her shoulders, and she goes in and she comes out and she's chanting. Suddenly, we're in a big meadow, and suddenly I see like a flash of light to my left, and I look past the shoulder of the leader of my tribe. And I look, and there's like a big, we're in a meadow, and there's a huge circle behind us and around us of ponderosa pine trees. And standing right half in the shadow and half in the light of the fire are these little people, and they're all dressed in white. The men and women are the same size, and they're about up to my hip. They kind of look like dwarfs. And that size.
Well, that's an amazing part of the story, too. And, you know, we get that in Ireland with the leprechauns. Something has been going on. Artie, thanks for being on the program. Good luck on your next work. For Dan Galante, David Hines, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.